Welcome to the Dark Shadows Podcast with your co-hosts, Vicky Ray, Tom Diamond, and Keith Chowgo, bringing you all the odd goings-on from Collinsport, Maine.
Hello, welcome to Literary License Podcast, and today we're speaking to Adam Carlin. He is the son of the Emmy Award-winning John Carlin, as people from The Dark Shadows would know, played Willie Loomis, Carl Collins, William H. Loomis, and Desmond Collins, Alex Jenkins, and Kedrick Young, along with various other films and television performances. Adam is with us today. He's also a producer. He did Lights Out in 2010, and he's also had his hand at acting with films such as diverse as 1993's Mr. Jones. He's done Freddy's Nightmares, one episode of that in 1988, and has also done Angels in 2000. So welcome, Adam. How are you?
I said, thank you very much. I'm good. Thank you.
Great. And of course, with us, we have our normal co-host, which is Vicky Ray. Hello, Vicky.
Hey, everybody.
Tom Diamond.
Hello, everybody.
And Jesse Fulk.
Hello, how's it going?
So, Adam, I thought we'd start off today. Basically, we'll go into Dark Shadows, and we'll go into more of your father's career and various other things. So, basically, our listeners are probably more familiar with, well, your father's, you know, acting probably.
Dark Shadows.
Series, Dark Shadows and Cagney and Lacey as well, because we need to mention that as well.
Sure. Emmy Award winner, too.
So what are your early memories of your father when he was doing Dark Shadows? Because you were basically being born as the show was starting to take wing.
Exactly. I remember we always used to go to Jonathan Frid's house for, this is what a real memory of it. And he had this beautiful penthouse and had purple curtains everywhere. And I think he was trying to channel Bela Lugosi. Because he lived the vampire life. I mean, you felt like you were in a vampire's house. And the funny thing is, when I went back to New York in my early 20s, I went to a club called the Red Zone, and it was the same place where they shot Dark Shadows, which is crazy, which I didn't know till later when I found out it was 52nd and 10th, I think.
Disco.
I'm not sure of the streets
disco.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah, it wasn't a disco then, no. Disco was gone.
Oh, really?
I'm sad to say, yeah. No Bee Gees. It was all, you know, the new stuff. I can't remember what was even.
Oh, wow. I think what they did later on, and I'm not sure, but Le Magique comes to mind. Jonathan did and I thought that was where the original studio, or one of them, because there were two studios actually. They moved from the first one, I think after a year, to bigger quarters. And one of them became Le Magique, which was a disco. And Jonathan, around 1978, when interest first started in the reruns, Jonathan gave a blood bank. It was in accordance with the New York City blood bank, so he gave a benefit, and it was over there. But getting back to you, what are your reminiscences? You used to go down to the studio, right?
Yeah, I used to go down to the studio, and I would see the trees and the forest, and it looked much faker in real life. I know it didn't look that real in real life,
faker.
But it was great. And I remember my dad always, you know, holding my hand and people attacking him in the street. Willie, as you know, three or four, crazy. I mean, yeah, he, it was big. I'll tell you, it was a fan favorite.
How old were you? How old were you at the time?
Oh, my gosh. Probably 4, 5,
wow.
I guess.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. I remember that, you know, he would always sign the autographs and stuff, and it was very nice.
What were your reminiscences of some of the Dark Shadows co-stars? You were pretty young at the time.
Oh gosh, all good. We had dinner with Lar Parker. My dad actually did a Charlie's Angels later, and I got to meet Kate Jackson, mm-hmm. and who was on the show, obviously.
Sure.
I met her. Yeah. That's later on. Exactly. But mm-hmm. as a young kid, I wasn't interacted that much with the cast that I remember. I just met them later in life. Mm-hmm. And it was all good. I just saw Chris Panic on some show the other day.
Yep.
And they asked about John Carlin. And he said, the genius. He was really sweet. Really sweet. I remember him. And David Selby is just the sweetest guy ever.
Quentin.
Yeah, Jimmy Storm is, couldn't be a better guy in the world than Jimmy Storm either, you know. And I do remember them as a kid, you know, I got to know them from traveling with my dad to the Shadow Con and all that.
Yeah, I was asking that your father, after Dark Shadows ended, did a lot of TV series and stuff. Were you ever able to go on any of those sets? Because I noticed that your father did Shazam, which I used to love when I was a kid.
Shazam, is that funny? I didn't go on the Shazam set. I went on the Charlie's Angels set. I think he missed too many 70 shows back in the day. He did them all.
Yeah.
I remember being on sets all the time with him, actually.
How about Cagney and Lacey?
Cagney and Lacey was shot on Lacey Street in downtown L.A. in a warehouse.
Oh, wow.
And Tyne and Sharon, they couldn't have been two nicer ladies.
So your father won an Emmy for his portrayal of Harvey Lacey. What was, do you have any memories of what your father felt when he won his Emmy? Cause that's quite.
He was so happy, you know, and going back to Brooklyn and seeing his sisters and stuff. And they were so proud of him. It was crazy. You know, that's his last line. My three sisters went to Brooklyn, lit a few candles at the Lady of Czestochowa, and it worked. You know, he loved his sisters. And so when he went back to Brooklyn, he was quite the celebrity there. Everybody used to come and see him, and yeah, it was great. It was great. He, you know, he just loved that part of it. Made him, you know, connect with people even more, even though my dad pretty much connected with everybody. Could be a little over the top sometimes, but you know, I'm sure everybody on the show knows his both sides of his personality. he's when he's at his best, there's nobody better. Generous, sweet, compassionate, great.
And what's your earliest memory of your father and his work that you enjoyed?
Without a doubt, Dark Shadows. Yeah, I remember him coming home, and you know, I'd see the same clothes that he wore on the set. And he'd come home, and it would be like, it was strange to me as a young kid watching him and then seeing him in the same outfit come up. I would just recognize them in my head from the show. But mostly walking on the street with him and him being, you know, approached by a lot of people, all so friendly and nice, you know. I guess really brought that out in people.
He did a lot of theater performances. Were you able to see him do any of his theatrical performances?
You know, I didn't. There's this. If somebody, I know there is a film that exists of the first production of Prometheus ever done. And he did it at Stanford University. And I've tried to get in, and I didn't try too hard. But I know there's a film that exists with him in Prometheus Bound. And it's supposedly, you know, Harold Gould played the person speaking to him, and they built Mount Olympus on the stage, and he's chained up on this big thing. I wasn't born yet, and it was supposedly unbelievable. I've always mean to go back. I gave a real lame attempt. I just talked, and so I don't know what it would be, and I didn't dig in deep, but I know it exists. There is a tape somewhere in the archives there of, or a film, probably, obviously, of him doing that, which would be amazing to see, because that would be him at his absolute prime. And, it, you know, he would get to use his voice. He quotes Oscar Werner. There's three things to an actor: voice, and voice, which isn't true. You got to have a little more than that. But, you know, he was a big Shakespeare fan, my father. He would always be reciting it.
That's interesting, especially in view of his friendship.
Yeah,
with Jonathan.
Huge Shakespeare.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So he must have been able to relate. I always saw that he was able to lighten Jonathan up because, you know, Jonathan was a very serious guy.
Yeah.
And he always made, and at the conventions, Jonathan really loved him because you could see that he was able to get Jonathan, he was really more at ease when your father was around. And especially when they did all those little skits where there was one convention where they put him in with Jonathan in the coffin, and Willie had and your father had to open the coffin, I don't know if you were there for that one, but I think they
I almost, wasn't on set that day. No.
Well, no, this was at the Dark Shadows convention many years
ago. Oh,
later.
I wasn't at that one. No.
They actually had a makeshift coffin. And they put, they had a little curtain so that the fans wouldn't see it. And they put Jonathan in the coffin. And the two of them were, your father's opening the coffin and then starts to crack up. And I don't know what the hell they were saying to each other, And I think.
Oh, that's great. Which one? Do you remember where that one was? What city?
That might have been one of the California conventions, I think. And it's on YouTube. I think it would have been in the 90s. Your father almost fell into the coffin, actually.
That's funny. That may have been, that's funny. I don't know how I missed. I always seem to go to all the ones in California. Were they just in California, New York? I think there may have been one in San Diego. I don't know.
Possibly.
We went to the San Diego Zoo. I don't know.
There were a couple in Kentucky, actually, because Roger Davis.
Kentucky. Oh, that's great.
Yeah, because Roger
that's
Davis.
That's right, Roger.
Had the owned the hotel there, and the fans were apparently there was an offshoot of fans that were looking, and so he graciously donated that. And but it was basically between L.A., the airport, Newark. They had it at the Newark Gateway, the early ones, and then after that at the Trade Center, the old Trade Center, and then from there it switched to the Marriott in Brooklyn, and also at the in Tarrytown, the mansion that the
Tarrytown. He always said that one of the best meals he ever had in his life, Roger Davis cooked for him.
Really?
I can't believe that meal he cooked for me. And my dad, let me tell you, one thing that man had was a palate. He knew good food. We really connected over that, eating great food. And Roger, he had that Southern tough cooking, I guess, you know. He would always mention it when he'd see him. It's funny. And he seemed all of the characters he got along great with, all the people. Laura Parker, we had dinner with her in New York when one of the conventions was going on, and she was so sweet.
No, they all were. go ahead, Keith.
Because Cagney and Lacey were quite popular, they did come back and do like three different TV movies. Did your father ever mention how that was to step back into a role after leaving?
Oh, yeah. I was with him. I was with every time on those movies. We'd stay at the Park Meridian, and my dad, not as great as our relationship was, it would turn sometimes. And he locked me out of the hotel room, and we were screaming at each other. And he opened it for a second, and then he slammed it, and I kind of back kicked the door and blew it off the hinges.
Oh my God.
And we laid down and we said something. I remember him calling up. He says, "Something's wrong with the door up here. Could you guys come and fix it?" The door's on the ground. It was a clean break. So they just fixed it. They were very nice. And it was funny.
Stuff.
And then everything was fine right after that. Yeah. And I remember that we had a view, at the Park Meridian, and it was just right outside our window, about literally 10 feet away, was just an old brownstone building. And we say it's the greatest view you ever had, just a small alley and then just to look at the brownstone. I said, this is better than looking at the park, from the plaza at the penthouse. It was such a beautiful, mellow New York feel just looking at that old brownstone building. So he really loved New York. He appreciated it so much. Great times there.
And you were actually born after you have your grandfather's name, right?
My grandfather's name.
Yeah,
who I never met. He died. Yeah, he died. Before I was born, I never met him.
Mm.
He looked like I have a picture of him and my cousin Joe, who is passed. And he looks exactly, if you made if you put Popeye into a real person, he looked like Popeye. It was crazy. I mean, you look at the picture and it's just insane. He looks like a cross between Popeye and Pope John Paul, but mostly Popeye. It's just this tough, gruff look to him, you know.
It's quite the description.
Great. My dad said if he had $2, if his dad had $2, he didn't give him half. He gave him the whole $2 all the time.
Wow.
So he was a very generous man, which I guess where my dad got it from.
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely.
Well, you went into acting yourself. Was your father supportive of you going into acting? Because it is a hard career.
Yeah, it wasn't my first choice. I was playing baseball at the time and doing very, very well. Was going to most likely do something. And I snapped my ankle. And, you know, I ended up going to Pepperdine and then I just kind of phased into it because I always read lines with my dad and, I got a couple really good trips out of it. I got 3 months in Lithuania, which was absolutely amazing, which then got me to London. Actually, it was the second time I was in London, but hanging out with some of the greatest. You know, the guy, the stunt man was amazing. I would love to find him again. We got numbers, and you know how you lose things.
You were telling us about that before we started. Now, this was Schwarzenegger's stunt man or something?
Stunt double.
Schwarzenegger's stunt man, yeah. Stunt double for years, years, yeah. And he was working on the show, I remember he was 52 at the time because he just had a baby girl. And he says it was beyond the light of his life. He said he felt like his whole life was beginning again. Yeah, he was such, what a great, great dude. Great dude. All the English. Yeah, go on.
Go ahead.
No. I was just saying all the English people on the show. It was basically all English people. And the producer was the same guy that produced Enter the Dragon.
Which
was funny. Yeah.
You also did an episode of Freddy's Nightmares. What was that like?
Yeah, no kidding.
Because that was that.
It was fun. It was the and I actually Brad Pitt had just come in before me, and he did the next episode. His career ended up a little bit better than mine.
Oh boy!
But I remember meeting him for a second. We talked. He was in makeup or dressing or something. And he was a real what a good dude. What a good dude.
Because they used to film those.
But
very quickly,
yeah, it was great.
Quick fix.
Yeah, exactly. It took him years after that to think to become big. He really put in the time.
I think Dallas sleeping with Priscilla Presley on Dallas might have helped a little bit there as well. So.
Yeah. That's true.
I want to take you back to Dark Shadows for a minute again. Do you recall?
Yeah.
I want to go over some of a couple of the stars who are no longer with us, because that's obviously more poignant. And unfortunately, we're not able to interview them unless we have a séance, and even then, I don't think that would work. But Thayer David, do you remember him at all from the show?
Oh yeah, I remember Thayer definitely. He had that same great stoic quality as a person. He was almost, you guys know, I mean, you can't even explain him. Just in Rocky, how great was he in Rocky? I mean, he just created that whole scene in Rocky. It was fantastic. And very much, very, very low-key and really calm, nice guy. That guy, great, great dude. Yeah.
Wow. And let's see. Do you remember Dennis Patrick at all?
Patrick? Oh gosh, Dennis Patrick! What a sweetheart! Total, just great. I can't tell you how good Dennis Patrick was. Gosh, yeah. I mean, I actually remember him from New York, and he played with me when I was a kid, and I remember him quite well. Actually, Dennis Patrick, Rocky Graziano, boxing champ, middleweight champion of the world.
Mm-hmm.
Me, my dad, and him hung out one day. That's why I got such a good memory of Dennis. Yeah. Yeah. Graziano was our neighbor. And,
I think
it was great. He was still. And he comes up, I remember this. Paul Newman did the movie about him, Someone Up There Likes Me, right?
Yes.
And Rocky comes up and he says, what did you think of my movie? The movie about me. Yeah, you know, my dad, you know, basically said it was okay and a kind of a, I wouldn't say sarcastic, but maybe a little sarcastic. Right. He said, you just pissed you didn't play it. I said, maybe. But, Mike, I guess he got tons of accolades at the American Academy. They knew he was really good. What was it? Mio in Cursette.
Mm-hmm.
With Miriamne. That was one of his favorite plays, and he did that at the Academy in some small theater. I remember. He showed me the theater, and it was right near the old Homestead Steakhouse.
Wow.
In like 22nd Street or something. Yeah, it was just office
place.
Building.
I remember that place, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's
and,
just...
Yeah.
What about...
Look, if you guys look up Winterset and look at the long... the long solo performance of gosh, I can't even think of the character, Mio. And it's great. It's really great writing. Really great writing. Almost Shakespearean in a way.
Were you ever on the set?
Were
you ever on the set when there were any bloopers or anything that actually happened? Were you on the set during the
taping? You know. That's funny. I forgot to bring. I remember seeing the bat, the notorious bat, hanging from a white string. I'm like, wait. It, even to me as a kid, it looked so silly. And somehow on set, even though you saw the string, it still worked. I don't know. I mean, you got to give Dan Curtis a lot of credit freaking that show work like it did? Because you still watch it, and it still is has that haunting feel to it. It's really something else. Yeah, the bat. The bat and the fake pine trees.
Oh yeah, go ahead, Keith.
So I've really got nothing.
I'll take over if you want.
Yeah, you take over. Sorry.
Oh, are you sure? Are you sure? Okay.
Oh, yeah.
What about Joan Bennett? What are your recollections regarding Joan Bennett?
Oh gosh, I remember seeing her in old movies as a young kid, and then you know my dad and I always used to watch old movies. You got to say Wuthering Heights is quite possibly the greatest movie of all time. People think it's melodramatic and over the top. I thought
it was great.
Merle
Oberon.
But she wasn't Merle Oberon exactly. Yeah, they tried to remake it 100 times.
Oh my god, I love that movie.
Oh, it's crazy. Yeah, it's one of my favorites. And but I remember seeing that movie and then seeing Joan Bennett. I don't remember the movie as a young girl, you know, she was so pretty. And then meeting her as an older, you know, classy lady, you know, she was something else. She was a real stoic movie star, kind of dead.
She had a presence about her, that's for sure.
Yeah.
Jesse, Vicky, do you have any questions for him?
No, y'all seem to be fielding it. I'm just here to be decorative.
No. You open your mouth. Come on.
Yeah, I was going to say, you'd already took my question about Joan Bennett, and because I know she was a 20 screen star as well, wasn't she? She did silent movies.
Oh yeah. She'd done. I mean, I can just see her face right now.
She had a little scandal
watching the TV. My dad always used to play her old movies.
Yeah, she led an interesting life. Actually, a fascinating life. Some of her scandals were legendary.
Yeah. I don't know them, but that's interesting. I'm gonna look them up.
Yeah, there's a couple. She's a beautiful
It's
woman.
Funny. I saw a documentary. My dad was a big Polish patriot type of guy. He had Rembrandt's Polish rider on my wall with a picture of the Pope right next to it.
Wow.
And I'm watching this documentary, and it's on this sculptor named Szapolski. And they say, everybody says he was by far the greatest sculptor that ever lived. Unknown almost, because all of his stuff was blown up in the war in Germany. And I look to see, you know, at the end I see producer Leonardo DiCaprio's dad. And they show pictures of him and, of Leonardo DiCaprio with this guy. You got to watch the documentary. It's crazy.
What's it called again?
I think it's just called Szapolski. I think it's called Szapolski. Just, you know, look up the great Polish sculptor. And, it shows DiCaprio with him, you know, and Szapolski's playing with him. And he lived literally in the same, right on the same street that my dad did before he passed. And if my dad would have met him, wow, that would have been a great meeting. He would have beyond appreciated that. I told him about it. It was right before he was passing, and he was so interested. He couldn't believe he never heard of the guy. And, look up some of his sculptures. And there was three story sculptures he did in Germany that they think the Germans have somewhere still because they knew they'd be worth something or whatever. And they blew a lot of them up, too, by accident when you drop a bomb and blows up things that you don't want to.
Sure,
but
sure.
Yeah, it's a real interesting documentary on this guy. He was very, very cocky in a very mellow way. He knew he was the best. And funny. And DiCaprio's pop used to come into our restaurant all the time. My stepdad, Antonio, we owned a restaurant, and DiCaprio's dad always used to come in. So he was. I think they were in Silver Lake or something. But I don't know how I got off into that. Oh, because of the Polish sculpture. Yeah, sculptor.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Oh.
Keith?
So, I'm just trying to figure out what we could
There's
ask.
There's only so many questions.
Yeah. I know, because we were talking about your career. Right.
There's not much to talk about.
How about when you used to go up with your pop to the movie sets when the movies were being done for Dark Shadows?
Yeah. He did. The Dark Shadow movie sets up there. Uh-huh. I did go once up there, and you know whatever building or house they use in that area, it was. You remember the scene where the house crashes on him, the glass.
Yeah.
There's a scene where he's riding a bike and he crashes. It all falls on him. I remember seeing that greenhouse and him setting it up, how the glass was falling, and he was on a bike. And my dad had to learn how to ride a bike for that scene. He never drove a car until he was 33.
Really? Wow. I don't feel so bad.
He couldn't drive. He had to learn how to drive. Yeah, I mean,
we must have been in New Yorker then.
He's a
New Yorker.
Yeah.
True New Yorker.
Sure. And came from Brooklyn.
Oh, yeah.
Also.
Listen now. He's from Brooklyn. Listen how isolated you become. His sister worked on 37th and 8th Avenue in the Garment District, 8th or 9th Avenue. And she had she had worked there over 30 years and had never been to Central Park. Literally 15 blocks up the street.
Wow.
Incredible. Here's a great moment. When we went to do the movie for Cagney and Lacey, he took his sister on a horse ride in the carriage, and she smiled like she had never seen Central Park in her life.
Really?
Impossible.
Wow.
And we took her for a ride, and Aunt Tilly was the best. And she was definitely an angel, at least to me. And you know, I know my dad loved her beyond imagination.
So how many
Vicky and Mary were?
Yeah.
He had three sisters, Vicky and Mary were a little bit tougher, but great, too.
And they were the nuns, Vicky and Mary?
No. None of them were nuns. My Tilly used to make dinner for the nuns. No, they lit candles at the Lady of Czestochowa.
Oh, I see. I thought they were nuns.
Yeah. No, especially, let me tell you, Vicky and Mary were far from nuns. Tilly was a nun.
Can you tell us a little more about that?
Oh, man. But she used to feed the poor, the nuns, everything. Her whole last part of her life was doing that. And she told me that she knew that she should never have a kid, but she used to ride the bus into New York all the time, and all her friends used to say, "How can you not have a child? You're 29 years old. It doesn't make any sense." And she got drunk that night and was with Uncle Joe, and they had Big Joe, 6'8". Kindest guy of all time, yeah. And she used to follow him to school, hiding behind trees. He used to tell me, he used to see her hiding. He's, "Mom, what are you doing? Leave me alone, please." Yeah,
Some family. My own personal recollection of your father when I met him at Dark Shadows Con in Los Angeles in 1984, and he was at the bar, sufficiently getting ready for it. And I walked up to him and I said, "Mr. Carlin, my name is Tom Diamond, blah, blah, blah." Anyway, he says, and he looks at me, he puts his arm around me, and he said, "Tom, where do you come from?" And I go, "Well, I was born in Brooklyn." I was born in Brooklyn, too. We have to stick together.
Yeah, my dad never left Brooklyn, you know. Yeah. He never left Brooklyn. Neither his whole, boy. You know, it was who he was, you know, the tough parts of he told me that they used to wrap newspaper and rubber bands, his sisters, around his feet to go to school with an old shoe sole, a bottom of a shoe sole, and then they would tie, and I go, and it sounded so not real. I'm like, why would he make that up and just say that? And then I asked all three of his sisters, they go, absolutely, we did it all the time. So newspaper and rubber bands around a sole, you know, at least he had the bottom part. Yeah.
At least his soles were protected.
Yeah, exactly. It's very important. Yeah, as I said, he said, oh, we had a sole. He just told me about the rubber bands in the newspaper. You know, we always had a piece of rubber to put under his foot.
Is your your grandparents were first generation to America, or were they actually your grandparents?
Yeah, my grandfather came from Poland and Germany. And I think he came from Germany here. He somehow got into Germany, and there's a picture of him with 50 kids in a picture. Everybody's head is shaved, and there are these two, you know, very stoic, strict-looking teachers with kind of like black top hats on, and he's the only kid with long, long hair. It's craziest picture you've ever seen. It doesn't make any sense whatsoever. And it's long. I mean, way, but you know, 3 inches past his ears, and everybody else's head is shaved. He must have come right from Poland and didn't get the haircut yet, I imagine. I don't know. I don't know what. My dad didn't know this kind of.
Well, so that means that for your father, normally, like what immigrants, when they come to America, they want their children to be doctors and lawyers. And
right.
So how did they react to your father wanting to be an actor? It must have kind of like thrown them slightly.
Good question.
No, not at all. He went into the Air Force at 16 years old. He had to get signed off. He was just about to turn 17, you know, and he said it was the great one of the, you know, he went to Korea, Japan, and then he got stationed. They were going to station him in Arkansas, and the guy, the captain or whoever it was that did the stationing, happened to be from Brooklyn, and he says, John, looks like they got you in Arkansas. And he goes, oh no. And he says, would you appreciate Long Beach better, California? And he says, oh my god. And he said he got to Long Beach, he thought he was in heaven. Imagine Long Beach in whatever it was, 53, I don't know what year it was. He was 18 years old, and he got stationed in Long Beach. I'm not sure if his tours were in Korea and Japan were after or before that. I think it was after, and he was in Long Beach, and then he was a policeman in San Francisco, which he said he really loved.
Wow, interesting.
Also, so that and then he came back. One of his best friends from Brooklyn got him a job in a toy manufacturing shop where he would put the toy on a conveyor belt, mm-hmm. and then it would just keep going. And he said he lasted 15 minutes. And he said, you know, he'd already seen Marlon Brando perform, and he thought he could do that stuff. And his girlfriend at the time paid $700 for him. I remember her name, Marianne Nazanrich, gave him $700 to go to the Academy.
Wow.
And Academy of Dramatic Arts. That's how it all started. Yeah. Mm. Yeah.
Mm. He was a cop, though? And, your father was a cop?
Where my mom ironically teaches today in LA. She's the number one teacher in Los Angeles for third year at Good the American her. Academy for the past 30 years. Yeah, it's great.
Good for her.
And funny enough, she became incredible friends with Jack Albertson's ex-wife, who just recently passed in her late 90s. And that's who played my dad's dad and subject was roses.
Okay.
Wow. Your father was a cop? I didn't know that.
Yeah, he was a military policeman in San Francisco. Yeah. Okay. You know, he was stationed there as a policeman. Yeah.
Very interesting. Very interesting. Now, yeah. Your father did a lot, and I do want to tell the fans that we had scheduled, and we were working with Adam to schedule an interview with John, who was getting better. He had, of course, been severely incapacitated, and John was getting better, and he actually had consented to the interview. And then, unfortunately, this turn of events happened. But fortunately for us, Adam graciously consented and to talk to us. Adam, what are you? You know,
about his fan. I mean, his you guys are amazing. His fans, he truly appreciated it. One of the ladies always used to send him Marie McGinty. She's in Pennsylvania. And she always used to send him Polish hams from the butchers there and steaks and stuff. So
I love it.
She was really great. Yeah, yeah. She was good food.
Oh, you talk about Mad Marie. She's Mad Marie on
Facebook. Yeah, Mad Marie.
Marie McGinty. Very sweet gal. Very sweet gal.
Yeah.
And I'm glad you brought her up, because I want to thank her for being the go-between initially. Getting to you and getting to John and caretaker Tammy and the whole bit. She was, so I want to give her credit where credit is due as well.
She's been great. She's been there the whole time. And she got a little bit of my dad's wrath once, I think, which it's never anything personal. He just, you know, if he doesn't feel like get him to buck out. Leave me the fuck alone, you know. And then the next minute, it'll be the most cordial, kind person of all time. You know, he really was a man of extremes, that's for sure.
Well, I'll never forget when I first met him, and I had a civil service job, and I told him what I did, and he said, "Do better." He looked at me and said,
yeah,
"Do better."
He would... He would say things off the cuff. Here, I'll give you a good. This is how my dad could be. We had seen a movie, and we're walking out of a movie theater in downtown L.A., and this little lady dressed like a nurse. I mean, she was a nurse, and she says, "Excuse me, gentlemen." And my dad goes, "Not today, not today." And I was so embarrassed. I go, "Oh my God." So I stopped to talk to her, and she was, I used to volunteer at the Children's Hospital. Mm-hmm. So it was St. Jude's, and you know, she was getting donations. And so I gave her $20 and apologized profusely. My dad had walked away, and then he comes back. I didn't even see him, and he comes back and he profusely apologizes. And then the lady recognizes him and just falls into his arms and he gives her a big hug. He says, "What a lady you are." And he gives her $200 and he says, I am so sorry for the way I reacted." She goes, "I understand. I don't want to be, you know." So his first reaction can be not right. But then, you know, he'll 99% of the time make up for it.
Well, I do have to say, as a postscript to my story, was that 25 years later, when I ran into him at the convention again, and so I said, "Well, John, I did do better," and I told him, and he said to me, "I said that to you?"
Exactly.
"I say that to you?"
Know, it's perfect. Oh, exactly. You know, and you bring him up when you say that he did something wrong or bad, and he hears that he goes, I can't believe it. I'll tell you, my dad never had an agenda or a plan past the moment,
I believe it.
It's a great way to live, but it's not practical, obviously. But he never had an agenda, never planned anything out, you know, all through the things. We never owned a house, a car, anything, you know. We all just had a good time for the moment, And, you know, I remember walking in to Nikki Blair's, was the last of the Mohicans of the real Hollywood restaurants. And he's sitting with Mickey Mantle and Mike Tyson.
Wow.
Like, oh my, and me being a baseball player. I mean, Mike Tyson was, I mean, also my hero.
Sure.
But Mickey Mantle, my God, Mickey Mantle. And I think he had the fastest time to first base ever. It was like 3.142. And I said, I've been trying to break that record and get time that I was, you know, literally two ticks off of it. And I said, I can't get below it, Mickey. He said, well, if you're even close to that, you're damn fast, because I was fast, kid.
He even had dinner with Frank Sinatra. You were telling me that story once. Where you
oh, yeah. Oh, no, this is fun. Well, he stayed in Frank Sinatra's house. Well, this is funny. He's we're at Mateo's, old school Italian restaurant where everybody used to go. Now, Sinatra is sitting across the restaurant, and he's telling me and Jimmy Luisi, it was just the three of us, and he says, oh, there's Frank. He says, you know, he let him stay in his house and everything, but this is 100 years ago. He goes up and he says, well, say hi to him. You know, Jimmy's giving him a little joke, and he goes up to, he says, Mr. Sinatra, he says, I want to thank you for letting me stay in your house, and, you know, very, you know, you're Frank Sinatra, my God. Very much like my dad, too, as far as tipping goes. Tipping everybody $100 bill everywhere he goes.
Wow.
And he explains the situation years ago. And Frank Sinatra shrugs his shoulders and says, I don't know who you are. And then somebody explained who he was, and because they all the waiters knew my dad at the restaurant. And when he just walked by, he had to be helped walking at the time. And as he left, he put his hand on my dad's shoulder as he walked by. I don't know what it meant, like, I'm sorry for you, or I remember you. I'm not quite sure. But it was funny. He couldn't remember him at that moment. You know, he was going at the time.
What are your recollections about Nancy Barrett on Dark Shadows?
I've only met Nancy a couple times and loved her character, but I didn't know her very well. Didn't know her that well.
Mm-hmm. And Alexandra Mulkey.
Yeah.
And Alexandra Mulkey, who played Vicky.
She was. I remember having a crush on her at about, you know, 5 years old. I remember thinking how beautiful she was. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, she's, but, you know, I just remember being very sweet and calm. I'd be meeting her. And, she wasn't, you know, they shot a little movie thing here at Tammy's. Have you guys seen it? I haven't seen
Mm-mm.
it yet.
Mm-mm.
Tammy, what was it about? What was the scene about?
It was with Chris Pennock and your dad?
It was with Chris Pennock and my dad. Do you guys know about this?
No.
Oh, it was this the one like where he played a vampire or something like that, where Chris Pennock played a vampire? A black and white thing?
Yes, yeah.
A black and white thing?
Interviewing for a job.
Interviewing for a job.
Yeah, yeah. I think that's on. And by the way, I didn't know Tammy was present. Everybody, this was Tammy.
Yeah.
Say hi, Tammy.
Hi. I'm just here for technical support, guys.
You surprised all of us. You surprised all of us. You were the candid camera. You were the X Factor in the. Well, Tammy.
He was the X Factor.
Tammy. Hey, Tammy. Tammy was John's caretaker through the whole thing. Tammy, what are your recollections of John? Let's get a spot question from you on that, if that's okay with you, Keith. Is that okay with you?
Oh, boy.
Okay, good. Right.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Go ahead.
I was just saying to Adam this morning how much I miss him, you know. We just miss him. He was, and how much he just lived in the moment. You know, if he, we were talking about, you know, if his dad wanted something, he'd give you $1,000 for it. It didn't matter. He wanted what he wanted. And made sure you had one too. Yeah, I miss him. I mean, I got to know him. He spent most of his days watching old movies. He loved to see Joan Bennett in her movies and eating good food. He was very happy and content. Every now and then he got a little crazy. He could run on the beach or something, throw a football. But, and music. Oh, we played a lot of music, a lot of Judy Garland, a lot of Billie Holiday, Frank Sinatra.
Chopin.
He loved his music. He would just, sometimes he would be so into the songs, he would almost cry. Like, he would just, like, it would just get to his soul. He was so expressive with that. I mean, he truly loved music and good movies. And wow. And the expression he had with them, enjoying them. He could truly enjoy them. Like a good meal. Like, I'd bring him some, he'd go, that was the best hot dog I had ever. It was always the best meal ever. When he liked something, he liked it a lot.
Yeah. No, he enjoyed life. He enjoyed life.
He did.
Yeah, and I was saying, Jimmy Storm, you can't find a better guy than that, except equals David Selby.
Nice.
But
man.
Jimmy was always, he came to visit him at the end a lot.
Yeah.
With his wife.
Very nice man.
Lovely wife. And they couldn't have been any sweeter.
They played opposite
or more support. Yeah, yeah.
They're very nice.
Yeah,
they play.
Oh, there's, yeah. Yeah.
Much later.
Yeah,
on,
Jimmy
opposite.
Is.
Yeah, absolutely.
Oh, he loved Jimmy Storm. Oh,
he loved Jimmy. He really, I mean, he and, you know, I talked to him. He loved Jimmy. Really loved Jimmy.
He'd love to see David Selby, too, come around. He'd come say hi. He'd get excited to say hi to him. And Laura Parker. I mean, they all really kept in touch. Such a family, you know. They were a true family.
Well, I understand.
They really looked out for each other.
Well, we all felt really bad when we heard about your dad dying.
Yes. Thank you.
Really, really.
It was obviously tough, but, you know, he was almost 87. So.
Next week?
Yeah, it'll be next week. So, I guess 86 and a half. And, I mean, I can't believe he made it that long. And the great thing is, even though he was bedridden and, you know, we could get him up and walk once in a while. We took him to restaurants. You know, Tammy made his life so, so good, you know.
Sure.
He begged me to get him out of the home, and he always ate good, had, you know, great things, and he was very, very content, you know. He really was.
He loved the cat. He loved the dog. Mm-hmm. We had animals. That always excited him. He loved them. Mm-hmm. I couldn't stop him from feeding the dog. He always wanted to
feed the dog.
What are you giving the dog now?
Well, Vicky will identify with that. Vicky has what, three of them, Vicky? You have three dogs? Yeah.
Constant companion.
What kind, Vicky?
They're Chiweenies. They're mean little
Chiweenies.
Nobody's getting in my house, let's put it that way.
Oh, they're crazy. I have a Chihuahua that I have inherited from an ex-girlfriend, and I've had it for over 13 years now. She's 17 years old.
Oh my God!
And so is Tammy's dog. So is Tammy's dog, Foofy, who's the sweetest.
Yeah, he loves Foofy.
Yeah, Foofy is. You can't believe she's a Maltese. That's
Maltese. Yeah, a little 7 pounds.
7 pound Maltese.
Wow.
And I have a Chihuahua named Dallas. Who, gosh, she's the greatest. So I hear you. Yeah,
and the door.
Yeah, Chihuahua.
What did you say, Vicky?
Say that again. No, she will bark. I put her in the next room, totally mellow all day until somebody she doesn't know. She will just bark, 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 crazy. I'm like, and I tell everybody how great she is. But when you meet her at first, until you feed her and get to know her a little bit, then she warms up and does the little crab dance, spins around when she sees you. But it's very few and far between the people she does that for, you know. Otherwise, she just barks and barks. It's crazy. Put her in the next room. She's barking through the door when she hears someone else's voice nonstop.
Oh, we also have to mention how his very good friend of 60 years.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, is that
Howie Zach Norman, my uncle. Yeah, Zach. Yes. Zach is, you know, he's beyond words, Zach, the friendship that they had.
Very, very good friendship. And, very close.
He's actually releasing his old movie with my mom in it called Chief Zabu. It relates to, it's almost like a story, the way Chief Zabu takes over and the whole political thing of it. And he's had some success with it. He's been traveling to colleges and stuff with it. He's great. He's fantastic. He's talented. He was in a movie, Jaglom's movie, Festival at Cannes. Do you guys ever see it?
No, it doesn't ring a bell.
It's you got to watch it. It's you know, whatever this movie really works, and he's got.
What was that?
Festival at Cannes. Festival at Cannes, and the other one was Chief Zabu.
Okay.
I think he may have changed the name again. But look up Chief Zabu, and it'll come up where, you know, he's playing it. He just played it in L.A. a while back in Santa Monica theaters, and it got good response.
You know, Howie might have been doing some interviews with your dad. He might have been putting something together.
Maybe. I'm not sure. Yeah. Yeah. But
they spent a lot of time on the phone. They'd get together for dinners. They talked almost every day.
Yeah. Actually, the day I was born, after everything happened, he went to the racetrack with Howie. That's how long I know Howie.
I'll bet he picked a winner. I'll bet he picked a winner.
Yeah.
that's for sure. I got one more quickie regarding Shadows. Did your father ever tell you about how he got the job? Because, you know, there was another actor, Jimmy Hall, who was the first Willie Loomis, and he was on for a few episodes. Right. And then,
that's funny. Yeah, you tell. Now that you're saying it, I remember. But I wouldn't. That's funny. Yeah, I remember this.
Your pop, apparently, I see from the research that your father was actually going to move to California when he got the call. Do you know anything?
Yes.
About,
yes.
Tell us.
Yeah, he was. He was moving. He was going to. We came back three times, back and forth to California, back to New York, back and back. And, you know, I was so young, I wasn't really sure what was going on. But now that you say that, they actually, you know, they wanted him for the part. They actually called him without a reading, believe it or not.
Yeah, I heard.
This is they'd seen him somewhere on something, you know, and they wanted him for the part. So I don't know why the other guy was dismissed. How was Jimmy Hall, by the way? Was he good?
He's doing fine. I actually do talk with him.
Still alive? Oh,
he
that's
sure
great.
Is. Jimmy
that's
Hall's
great.
Did you ever meet him? I don't know if you ever met him. I don't think you.
I don't think so.
No,
I don't think. Did he go to the Shadow Cons?
No.
I
ran into him by accident. He's doing just for the fans. No, he's doing well. He's living in California. And he's enjoying his retirement, but the scuttlebutt was is that your father was able to bring something to the role that they were looking for, and
right.
This was
essentially
why, and they liked his background, for that, but. I got one question, one quick one before I hand it back to you guys. Adam, what do you have to say to the fans?
Yes. I can't say thank you enough. I mean, you know, all the letters, you know, everybody reaching out saying just beautiful things. I mean, it's really fantastic. My dad, sometimes he didn't seem like he appreciated it, just like everything he gets into a mood, but let me tell you, he really appreciated it beyond imagination. He loved it. He loved it. Yeah.
He was loved that.
And loved.
The fans loved him.
He would say thank you. Yeah. Yeah. He's quite a, I mean, I'm just thinking how big Dark Shadows. I mean, I didn't really understand the fame of it back then until I got older. I mean, Johnny Depp does a movie about Dark Shadows with Tim Burton. I mean, how crazy is that? That of a 60s soap opera.
Crazy, all right.
Yeah. You guys ever see the movie?
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't know what to think of it.
I caught 10 minutes of it. Yeah, yeah.
You saw the first 10 minutes, you caught the best of it.
Yeah. Actually, that's true, Keith. No, you know, you have no idea how true that is because, you know, and of course, there's a portion of the fandom that loves that movie. So I don't want to start stepping on it.
Right, yeah, yeah, yeah.
I think I'll step on the toes.
Go ahead, Keith.
It seems there.
You said it. But I'm sorry. Go ahead, Adam. What were you going to say?
It seemed very over the top, campy, more comedy, what I saw of it. And I saw a scene at the table or something, and it didn't pull me in right away. I should watch it again and give it a chance. I mean, Johnny Depp is great. And so I should give it a chance. Although I did not like the remake of Willy Wonka.
No, I did not.
One of the greatest.
And interesting, it's funny you mention that. It's funny you mention that because Denise Nickerson, who played Violet in the original Willy Wonka, was also a Dark Shadows star later on in 68, 69.
Oh, that's funny.
She played Amy Jennings. And then later on, Nora Collins. And of course, the new fans were saying, who the heck are they? Well, watch the show and you'll find out.
It didn't capture the magic that they had in Ed Wood. Now Ed Wood was great.
Oh yeah. Ed. Oh yeah. Oh God.
It was fantastic. God. It was really good. And Martin Landau, my God,
I clapped
really
when he won the Academy Award for that. I got up on my feet and clapped, and they, you know. And
oh yeah!
I mean,
Eddie, I love you, Eddie.
Eddie, and that's good. That's a good imitation, Eddie. I love it. Yeah, that's good. That's good.
Yeah, he was good. He was good.
Now, the first 10 minutes of the Depp movie were probably the best in terms of the origin, going back to 1795 and how Collingwood was built.
Right. Oh, that's good.
And that was because the original writer, the original writer was thrown out. He had a much more serious take on it, which was closer to Dark Shadows. And he was thrown out. But they kept that particular vignette or whatever it was. They kept those scenes in the final movie. Anyway.
Well, you know the actor that played Willie Loomis, you know what his first big role was, right?
You're talking about
the tough
Hall?
Kid. I can't think. No. In the remake of Dark Shadows.
Oh.
He was the tough kid in the Bad News Bears with Walter Matthau.
Oh yeah, I remember. I remember. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, the guy who played Willie. Yeah, I was actually happy to see him play it because and he did something else that was really good before that.
Good for that part.
Gosh, I can't think of his name.
That's going to drive me nuts. I'm going to have to look it up now.
Yeah, probably.
Yeah, get his name.
I can see it. I can see.
He deserves it. He deserves a big bump.
I can see his picture. I can see him in my mind, actually. The tough kid. I think he played the tough kid.
He played the tough kid. It was a pitcher
that
was with Tatum O'Neal in it.
Exactly.
Jackie Earl Haley.
Kind of a couple.
What is it, Keith?
Jackie Earl Haley.
Jackie Earle Haley, that's the name.
Jackie Earle Haley, there you go.
He also went on to play Freddy Krueger in the reboot.
Really?
I didn't know he played.
Yeah, right.
Wow.
And he also did the comic book movie as well, The Watchmen. He's in that as well.
As you can see, Keith's
When I did the Freddy's Nightmares, they got the real Freddy Krueger, which was funny. They had the real guy. So he played Freddy Krueger in the later movies?
Yeah. In the reboot. Yeah, they did a reboot of it.
Wow. Wow.
That's
interesting.
So you met the original Freddy. He's a nice, he's totally different than what you expect, isn't he? He's quite a nice.
Oh, yeah. Completely. Kind of completely.
Well, I think a lot of them are like
And the guy. Yeah.
Go ahead.
The guy that directed me in that had directed my dad in a movie of the week by chance. I can't think of his name. I can't remember his name. Really, really good dude. But that's it.
He did play in The Watchmen. That was a
you guys got more?
Yeah, he was in The Watchmen. Yeah, I got actually got two questions, and then we're gonna wrap it up, and that way we'll let you get back to your life in this pandemic time.
I don't know, anything you want.
Although I've enjoyed this, I'll tell you that much. I think we all have.
It's great.
Go ahead, Keith.
One of mine is a personal question, basically. As your father, after Dark Shadows, did so many iconic TV series, and as we are the same age, that's why I know they're iconic TV series, because these are things that we grew up on. Stuff like Kojak, Shazam, right. Manix.
Exactly. Shazam, that was funny. I remember I was excited when he got Shazam, I must admit.
But like Barnaby Jones, The Rockford Files, Lou Grant, this is like the television of my childhood. What was it like going to school and having your father appear in these TV shows that all the, you know, because
I saw your dad. That's all I used to hear. I saw your dad on this. I saw your dad on that. Yeah, it was good. It was fun. And my dad, you know, I was a very good baseball player and all through that. All the kids, you know, they loved my dad. You know, he used to take us all out to lunch, the whole team and stuff. And just good memories, good memories. I remember the only thing, you know, I take that back. The only thing he owned in that whole time, when it got picked up after the Emmy, he got a Jaguar. And he bought it in cash. And one day he's taken all my friends out to Damon's, the big steakhouse out here before they changed it. It was an old school. I mean, every Marilyn Monroe used to live in Glendale and be friends with Casey Stengel, who's the baseball field I played at. So she would always go to Damon's in Glendale. And you looked at it and it was, you know, the old style California with the old palm tree things that just Hawaiian vibe just done so perfectly. Anyway, we were going to lunch there and one of my buddies, I remember Carlos Calvo, he was Costa Rica. He says, Mr. Carlo, on the back of the car, it's a brand new car. He says, it's a little bit coming off. I don't know. It shouldn't be glued like that. And it runs the whole length of the car. And my dad just grabs the end of it and tears the whole thing off. And everybody couldn't believe he did it because he's just like ruining a new car, they're thinking. And then everybody just started laughing hysterically. And they still mentioned it to him. Remember, your dad tore that off the Jag. Nobody had a Jag in those days. And they all get a big kick out of that. It was funny. It was funny. But that's the way he was. You know, he didn't care much about stuff like that.
What's your favorite
memory? Well, I guess a little bit, or else he wouldn't have done it. My dad throwing the football on the – I'll tell you, this man could have been a professional quarterback. He could stick the football 50 yards sidearm and drop it in me at full speed and just – spiral it right into my hands. It was impossible. Unbelievable. I'm a good athlete. I could be a decent quarterback, but he had a touch that was unbelievable. I mean, beyond professional quarterback status. I mean, he was that good. He could just, and I'd run on the beach or the Santa Monica Pier and we would just play football all the time, you know, just be get some great wind sprints in, and it was fun. Yeah, we had it. And then we would go to Ivy at the Shore for lunch and have some Maine mussels with some pasta. Wow. And it was great. It was great. Wow. We had great times together. We always took long walks. Last part of his life, he lived in downtown LA before Tammy was taking care of him. Mm-hmm. He had a little place in Little Tokyo, and we always used to go to great steakhouses down there and walk downtown LA. And downtown LA, I never gave it credit. It is very reminiscent of New York in certain places. And I found out many of the same builders and architects did the same buildings down there. I mean, you go to a restaurant called Church and State in downtown LA. It feels more like New York than New York. It's in a building called the Biscuit Building, built in 1927, not even that old, but the same year the Empire State Building was built.
Wow.
And we had some great, great walks in downtown LA.
They
amazing.
Have those old hotels
all through it.
Too. All that old architecture.
Oh yeah.
Some of those hotels.
Yeah,
are really
it really. Exactly, and there was an old neon light we saw one
yes.
night on an old building, and it was 1910, and it said 10 cents a dance,
yeah.
and it was completely original. It was
wow.
unbelievable.
Wow.
Yeah, they got some real. I mean, you really check out downtown LA. It's something else. It really is. You got to kind of dive into it and see it, but it's something.
Lara Parker on her website when after he passed talked about him and her reminiscences. At one point they tried to set him up in Brooklyn or something like that because he wanted to go back to his roots, and I don't know if you're familiar with it, but I'm glad that he went back.
Yeah,
to California. I'm glad. Go ahead.
Yeah, one thing I want to let our fans know, because our podcast, we do other stuff besides Dark Shadows. We actually do a lot of horror films. And the episode that you did for...
Well, I felt very special. I thought I was the only guy on this.
Well, the thing is that it's a Miserable Life is the episode that you did for Freddy's Nightmare. And so for our horror fans...
Right, right.
Adam actually worked with Lars Parker Lincoln from Friday the 13th films.
Yeah.
And... the Tony Award-winning writer, director, and film producer and film director,
John Michael Cameron Thomas.
Yes, precisely.
Who John did Cameron. Yeah. We became very good friends on the set. And one of the biggest mistakes in my life, you know, I just could never put it together. I was a lot like my dad. I get on an airplane flying back to New York about probably 3 years after I did that, and I sit down and it's John Cameron sitting right next to me, and we just start laughing, and he offers me, he says, come down to my theater company I have there. And I meant to do it and I never did. I had a girlfriend there and I just kind of faded into, you know, whatever. But yeah, it was a really dumb mistake of mine not to do that. What a great guy. What a talent. Oh my God. Hedwig and the Mighty Inch, the movie he did.
Yeah.
Holy Jesus.
And it's played
to me, absolutely
all over the
brilliant.
World. Brilliant. So.
Oh my gosh. And then the big actor took over, right?
Yeah.
On
Neil
Broadway.
Patrick Harris did it. Yeah. Neil Patrick Harris.
Neil Patrick Harris.
Darren Criss is at it. In this country, we've had some. We had Anthony Head, who is probably known as Giles, as from Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
Right.
He's done it over here. It's gone all over the world. So it's, you know, it's a phenomenal.
Wow! Yeah, he was a great dude. He was really a good dude. I'm so happy for his success, and he deserves it. I mean, that movie was absolutely crazy, off the wall, but really good.
Mm-hmm. So,
did you guys see the movie?
Yes, Hedwig. It is.
Yeah.
Actually, we are actually covering that next season. So we're actually covering that.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
How is he today? How is he doing?
He's doing fine. Well, he did Short Bus, which kind of was kind of controversial. It's a good film, but because of the extravagant sex scenes in Short Bus, his second feature up, it kind of set him back a little bit, but he is working on a new film at the moment. So
tell me the name of the movie that he did.
It was a film called Short Bus, which actually showed the actors actually performed have real sex in the film called Short Bus about people's relationships and sexual relationships. And it was kind of risque for like 2006. But it's one of those films that the critics really loved. It won a bunch of awards, but I'm pretty sure Middle America probably had a lot of problems with it. Let's put it that way.
I know the Bible Belt probably did.
Yeah, it probably did. But it's a really good film. In Europe, it did really, really well. But it's a really good film called Short Bus, and he directed that as well. So, and
wow,
I think
he's
currently working on something new at the moment. I know that he's working on a film currently, so... Because he's in the midst of that when...
Good.
When last
Do you guys interview him at all?
We will be... He's actually going to be doing our podcast sometime next year. So we're doing...
Tell him Adam says hello.
I will do.
And I was so happy for him, man. He was a really good guy. We had laughs on the plane. It was just like, it was funny. I sit next to him right on the plane by crazy.
I think he does a lot of work on the planes because the guy he wrote Hedwig with, he met him on the plane on a cross-Atlantic flight as well. And basically they sat down next together. They came up with Hedwig and they wrote it together. And it was from sitting on a plane. So
that's genius for you. That's
wow. Funny. Yeah. I can see that. Yeah. Oh, he's a great conversationalist. I'll tell you, he really is. He's a good dude. Super bright.
So what we'll do is we'll wrap this up. So I want to thank you, Adam, for joining the Literary License Podcast.
And thank you, guys.
For doing the interview with us. So anyway, this is Keith saying goodnight from the Literary License Podcast. It's goodnight from Vicky. Say goodnight, Vicky.
Goodnight, everybody.
Goodnight, Jesse.
Thank you.
Goodnight, Tom.
Jesse speaks.
Good night, all, and thank you once again, Adam. This has been a Literary License Podcast production. If you cry for help, there's no help for you.